Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Local News Roundup. Man charged with sending explicit text messages to teenage girl. An Ector County Sheriff's Office affidavit detailed a 28-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly sent sexually explicit text messages to a teenage girl. Castulo Luna Jr. was charged with online solicitation of a minor, a second-degree felony. The reported text messages happened at all hours of the day from November 27, 2019 to December 31st. 2019, the affidavit stated. There were reportedly 2,963 text messages shared between Luna and a 13-year-old girl during that time frame. During an interview with Luna, he reportedly admitted to sending sexually explicit messages to the girl. He admitted to making a mistake with regard to the text messages. Luna was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center June 17th, jail records show. He had one bond totaling $20,000, and he posted bail June 18th. Man charged with pointing a handgun during road rage incident. A 21-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly pointed a gun at another man during a road rage incident. Emma Trey Saiz Lujan was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. He also has a failure to appear after he was charged with racing on the highway, a Class B misdemeanor. The reported assault happened at 10:01 p.m. June 23rd near the area of 4210 North JBS Parkway, an Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed. When officers arrived at the scene, there was reportedly a gray Ford Mustang traveling north on JBS Parkway and west on MCM Promenade. Officers conducted a traffic stop on the Mustang in the Lowe's parking lot, located at 4101 East 42nd. The driver was identified as Lujan, the affidavit stated. Lujan claimed there was a handgun in his vehicle. The handgun was located in the rear seat behind the driver. There was one 9mm round in the driver's seat. Lujan denied any assault happened. The victim, who was identified as Gustavo Samano, reportedly told officers that he was traveling east on 42nd and an actor was stopped in the roadway. Samano stated he honked his horn at the actor and the actor flipped him off, and then the actor pursued him into the Walmart parking lot. Samano stated he was near the Panda Express when the actor drove next to him and began to coerce him to a fight. Samano stated the actor pointed a gun at him. The gun was described as a handgun with a silver slide. Samano stated he fled the area. A show-up was reportedly conducted, and Samano identified Lujan as the person who pointed the gun at him, the release stated. Lujan was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has two bonds totaling $25,000 and was still in custody as of Thursday afternoon, jail records show. TMB disciplines Odessa doctor. At its June 12th meeting, the Texas Medical Board, TMB, disciplined 46 licensed physicians. The disciplinary actions included 10 orders related to quality of care violations, 7 orders related to unprofessional conduct, 4 voluntary surrenders revocations, 4 revocations, 2 suspensions, 2 orders related to non-therapeutic prescribing, 2 orders related to improper supervision or delegation, 2 orders related to peer review action, 4 orders related to other states' actions, 2 orders related to the violation of prior order, 2 orders related to violation of board rules, 2 orders related to Texas Physician Health Program violation, 2 orders related to impairment, and 1 order related to inadequate medical records. One of those related to Dr. Paul H. Coleman. Coleman entered into an agreed order of voluntary surrender in which he agreed to voluntarily surrender his Texas medical license in lieu of further disciplinary proceedings. The board found Coleman pleaded guilty to 3 felony counts of possession of child pornography and was sentenced to 10 years imprisonment. The board also ratified an order regarding a perfusionist and 9 cease and desist orders. It issued 180 physician licenses at the June meeting, bringing the total number of physician licenses issued in fiscal year 2020 to 3,835. Murray gets attendance update, no health guidance, by Ruth Campbell. Taking attendance is going to prove a challenge in the fall as districts consider various configurations for what their school years are going to look like. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray said in a media call Wednesday that he and other school chiefs and their leadership teams had a call with Texas Commissioner of Education Mike Morath to get an update on the situation with schools. We were scheduled to receive 2 updates, but we had 1 update yesterday, and one of those updates was postponed. What we did learn yesterday, Tuesday, was about school funding next year, and specifically how schools will be funded and how we will take attendance. The reason that attendance is so very important to public schools in Texas is because it is the primary driver for the way that we are funded. We are funded using an average daily attendance model. In other words, every day that a student attends school, we receive funding as a school district. So the way we take attendance next year is going to be critically important to the funding that schools receive, Murray said. He added that it's pretty easy to take attendance when students come to the buildings. The child is typically present, and the teacher indicates that the child is present, and then submits that information electronically to the school district, which sends it to the state. In return for that, the district is funded, Murray said. The challenge next year is in a remote or virtual learning environment is how does a teacher take attendance every day? And we learned some things yesterday from the commissioner. We'll have 2 opportunities next year. They fall into 2 categories. One category is synchronous, remote learning, and simply put, that is when a teacher is communicating live to a student in a virtual environment. It could be that the teacher is video conferencing with a student, or the teacher is on a telephone call with a student. In either of those cases, the teacher would simply indicate that the child is present, and that would count for attendance. That's pretty easy, he said. The more complex opportunity for attendance would happen in an asynchronous environment. This environment, the teacher has given the student an assignment and the student is completing that assignment, but the teacher may not be live with the student in that particular situation. How would a teacher take attendance if they don't physically see the student or they're not on a phone call? One way we will take attendance in an asynchronous environment is when the child submits work in an online environment. A child emails work to a teacher, or the student is participating in an online digital platform, and they are able to submit work in that manner. So that is one way, simply through the submission of work. that we will take attendance next year, Murray said. Another opportunity, he said, would be if the student logs into a digital application and we're able to record that the child is making progress in that environment. That would be another way that we can take attendance in that asynchronous environment. And then the third way is the student simply completes work and submits an assignment to a teacher. And so a student may complete work, such as they're writing a paper or completing a series of questions, etc. And they either email that assignment to a teacher or they upload it through a digital system, or in some way that work is transmitted from the student to the teacher. It could even be as simple as a picture of the work is text messaged to the teacher, so the teacher has evidence, Murray said. In those three scenarios, student attendance would count toward that child being present in school. What didn't happen yesterday, June 23rd, that we had anticipated was our health guidance. We had fully expected some guidance to be released yesterday that would give us some advice, some rules, if you will, in what the opening of school should look like. Everything from how many students could we have in each learning environment to will students and staff members be required to wear face coverings to how many kids we can put on a bus, Murray said. He noted that there has been a significant increase in the number of COVID-19 cases locally and statewide. And because of that, the state is going to revisit the guidelines that they were going to deliver to schools yesterday, and so we do not know when we will receive that guidance. It could be next week. It could be sometime early July or even after that. So that was a bit frustrating for us, but we certainly understand what's happening in our state. Because of that, I would encourage all members of our community to be mindful of the things that we must be doing as a community in order to take care of ourselves and in order to take care of the people around us, Murray said. It is critically important that we are washing our hands on a regular basis and keeping clean. It is critically important that when we are out in public and in groups, that we are wearing a face covering. That is important right now, and it is important that we maintain social distancing. Because of the significant spike that we are seeing, it will force school districts to make decisions that we don't want to make, Murray added. An example of this is that ECISD was hoping to bring some students back in July as part of summer school, but now the district is questioning that plan. We're seeing such an increase in cases that it may not be safe to bring students or teachers back to this environment. So in the coming days, we will be making a decision about our plans for the month of July. And if this continues, then it will certainly guide what decisions we'll be able to make in August. And again, I urge everyone to take care of yourself and be really socially responsible to not only yourself, but beware of the people around you and those individuals who may be impacted should we not make smart decisions. Again, that is wearing a face covering anytime that you are out, making sure that you keep your hands clean, using soap and water, or using hand sanitizer, and then maintaining social distance wherever you happen to be. Those three things will help our community remain much safer, and again, allow us as a school district to welcome more students into our buildings as we start the school year. While the district is waiting for guidance from the Texas Education Agency on restarting, plans are moving forward for the district's 34,000 students and more than 4,000 staff members. A guidance from TEA is going to be very important, but as we understand it, the guidance may contain a whole lot more shoulds and very few shalls. For us, it may be that here our best practices, ECISD, but at the end of the day, the decision is yours based on your local context. There may be some things that are shall In other words, these are things that we must do as a school district in order to keep our students and teachers safe. But with that said, because we don't know what that guidance is going to be, we will move forward with the guidance that we know, and that is from the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, guidance from our local medical community, and guidance from our local health department, really putting all of that guidance together, which will inform decisions moving forward, Murray said. ECISD has a large task force with at least 17 subcommittees working on reopening school this fall. A report was initially planned for next month. We don't have a date yet. I think the date may be a little further out now that the state guidance has been held back. We were very dependent on that to inform some of our final decisions, but we may have to regroup a little bit. I don't yet have a date as to when we will release that information, but we fully understand the need for our parents and staff members and students to have that information so that our entire community can make decisions. But as soon as we have that complete, then we'll certainly release that, Murray said. Obituaries for Friday, June 26th. Mary Lee Holmes, Robert Lee. Mary Lee Leuenberger Holmes passed away June 22nd. She was born in Kermit, November 23rd, 1949, and was a resident of Odessa most of her life. She married Son Holmes in 1974. Mary Lee was preceded in death by her parents, Bert and Betty Leuenberger, and a son-in-law, Burke Lewis Sr. Surviving her are her husband, W.L. Son Holmes, son William Trey Holmes, and wife Carrie, Kara, daughter Leanne Holmes Lewis, sisters Charlene Toulouse and husband Rand of Benbrook, and Joanne Sutton and husband Dave of Custer, South Dakota, and five grandchildren. A memorial for Mary Lee will be scheduled at a later date. A gift in honor of her passion for all children's education can be made to the Kinder Frogs School at Texas Christian University, a program for children with special needs. www.kinderfrogs.tcu.edu or mailed with a note for Restricted Kinder Frogs Fund in memory of Mary Lee Holmes to Kinder Frogs, Post Office Box 297415, Fort Worth 76129. Hector Javier Loya Ortiz. Hector Javier Loya Ortiz was born March 9th, 1974, and passed away June 20th. Death notice. Simona Najera Vasquez. Simona Najera Vasquez, 89, of Odessa, died Saturday, June 20th. Mass was celebrated Friday morning, June 26th, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, June 22nd, 2020. This is the opinion page. This is the column called Guest View. It is entitled, No Cure for Coronavirus Without Sufficient Contact Tracing, from the Washington Post. After the initial wave of novel coronavirus infections, the next period, waiting for an effective vaccine or drug therapy, will be a slog and require a host of measures to suppress outbreaks and keep people safe. One essential ingredient for this next period is nowhere near ready. If the economy is to be reopened in a way that is smart and prevents a major virus resurgence, the states must accelerate plans for contact tracing. Contact tracing locates those who are sick using case-by-case detective work, discovering whom they may have exposed, and isolating the ill so others can return to schools, offices, and factories. It has worked elsewhere, such as in South Korea. President Donald Trump has negligently dumped much of the overburden for the coronavirus response onto the states. An overarching federal response to the pandemic would have been better, but at this point, the states have the ball. Contact tracing has long been in the toolbox of state public health departments. Impressive efforts are underway to stand up contact tracing teams. But as Francis Stead Sellers and Ben Guarino report in The Post, the nation is fragmented and the results are patchwork. Overall, the United States is moving too slowly. A National Public Radio survey shows that the workforce in contact tracing nationwide has tripled in the past 6 weeks, from 11,142 workers to 37,110, but still well short of the estimated 100,000 or more tracers that some experts say is the minimum needed nationwide. According to NPR, given current case counts, only 7 states and the District of Columbia are prepared to contain outbreaks. Tracing and containment become harder when infections spike, as has occurred in Arizona. According to the multidisciplinary team at COVID Act Now, Arizona has only 100 contact tracers. But with an average of 1,740 new daily cases, needs 8,700 staff to trace all new cases in 48 hours before too many other people are infected. By contrast, New York has 9,600 contact tracers. With an average of 695 new daily cases, the state is in a position to trace all new infections in 48 hours. When combined with widely available testing, it means the virus there may be contained without lockdowns. The high proportion of asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic cases in the pandemic makes contact tracing more difficult. So does the natural suspicion of people who are contacted. Just getting over a proper caller ID could help contact tracers reach people who are overwhelmed with spam phone calls. Then tracers must coax people to cooperate, overcoming a reluctance to inform on others, especially friends and family, who might then have to self-quarantine as a result. While part of the federal money set aside for testing in the federal stimulus packages can go to contact tracing, states confront their own budget woes. State public health officials estimated in late April they needed about $4.8 billion to prepare 100,000 workers for contact tracing. Reopening is popular, but doing it without sufficient contact tracing and testing is foolish. We can and must be smarter. This column is entitled "Monuments Should Be Reevaluated" by Rich Lowry, King Features Syndicate. In the wave of cancellations sweeping America, Confederate statues have been particularly hard hit. They have been graffitied, assaulted, and torn down, while authorities rushed to remove them. For his part, President Donald Trump has been a steadfast defender of the statues and other forms of recognition of the Confederacy. He has come out in favor of preserving the names of military bases named after Confederate generals, and pointedly said that we should build on our heritage rather than tear it down. Conservatives tend to think the same. They reflexly oppose politically correct campaigns to destroy anything giving offense. They fear where the slippery slope of woke iconoclasm will lead. First is Jefferson Davis, ultimately George Washington. They value tradition and worry we are trashing part of our history. This impulse, though, is a mistake. Confederate statues and symbols deserve to be reevaluated and often mothballed. The statues are an unnecessary affront to black citizens who shouldn't have to see defenders of chattel slavery put on a pedestal, literally. It is impossible to evaluate these monuments without considering the context in why they were created. Many of them were erected as part of the push to enshrine a dishonest, prettied-up version of the Confederacy. Finally, learning about, say, Robert E. Lee doesn't require staring at a 60-foot-tall statue of him on a major Richmond, Virginia thoroughfare. We should make distinctions, of course. Big statues in prominent public places erected to make a point about the supposed glories of the Confederacy should be transferred elsewhere, ideally to museums or battlefields, but this should be done lawfully, not via mob action. The Confederate flag should be shunned as a symbol of a viciously flawed cause. Direct commemorations of the Confederate war dead, obelisks with lists of names, Confederate cemeteries, should be preserved to mark the human cost of a terrible conflict. The bases are a harder case, since their names have themselves entered the American military tradition. But as the source of those names becomes more widely known, it's going to be harder to ask African American soldiers willing to sacrifice their life and limb for their country to look past them. The Richmond statue of Lee, which Virginia Governor Ralph Northam has said is coming down, has long been a point of contention. In 1890, unveiling was a key moment in the creation of a cult of Lee as a man of, quote, moral strength and moral beauty, as the speaker put it that day. Frederick Douglass appropriately scorned this movement. It would seem, he wrote sarcastically, that the soldier who kills the most men in battle, even in a bad cause, is the greatest Christian and entitled to the highest place in heaven. The apotheosis of Lee was an element of a lost cause mythology that maintained that the Civil War wasn't truly about slavery, only Southern states defending their legitimate prerogatives. Alexander Stephens, the vice president of the Confederacy, would have scoffed at this. In his notorious Cornerstone speech in 1861, he said the new government was built on, quote, the great truth, unquote, of slavery. The theory of states' rights that the Confederacy used to justify secession wasn't meant to preserve our constitutional scheme, but to demolish it. The idea had been developed by former Vice President John C. Calhoun of South Carolina, who believed the country had set off on an erroneous nationalist path from the very beginning. Besides, the Southern states supported states' rights only to the extent that they were useful in protecting slavery, and insisted, after all, on a federal Fugitive Slave Act. Secession was a traitorous act that threatened to destroy the American nation, to create a rump republic built on slavery, and to make impossible the subsequent rise of the United States to a world power. Its leaders don't deserve to be given a place of honor in our landscape denied to worthier men. Confederate statues shouldn't be vandalized, but they should go.
This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, June 21st, 2020. Other voices. Guest view. The Basin, The Buck Stays Here by Renee Earls. They say everything comes back around, and dusting off the original Buy the Basin campaign is a great example. Started in the early 1990s, Buy the Basin was a joint campaign headed up by the Odessa and Midland Chambers of Commerce. At the time, it encouraged everyone in the Permian Basin to buy locally when possible. Online shopping didn't even exist at that time, but many people headed to Dallas or Lubbock to do their shopping. This awareness campaign shined a light on the importance of keeping those dollars local, resulting in increased jobs and sales tax dollars. Fast forward to the 21st century, the message has changed a bit as we deal with Amazon and online shopping options from around the world. However, one thing that has stayed constant is that for every dollar that is spent in the basin, additional jobs are created. According to the Perryman Group, a new job would be created in the Permian Basin if everyone in the area would spend as little as 49 cents at a local store or 23 cents at a local restaurant. The Buy the Basin campaign stresses the importance of locally owned and managed businesses and how they positively affect the local economy, adding jobs for our residents and keeping businesses open. Buying local directly impacts our economy. Reinvesting those sales tax dollars back into our community in regards to health care, education, roads, infrastructure, and more. The Odessa and Midland Chambers are grateful for the support of Medical Center Health System, Odessa Development Corporation, Midland County, City of Midland, Visit Midland, and Midland Development Corporation in helping fund this campaign. Several area chambers of commerce are also supporting the initiative as well, including Andrews, Artesia, Big Spring, Carlsbad, Hobbs, Monahans, and Seminole. We want the community to consider local options when shopping in stores or buying online. In fact, this may be more convenient than national online options, considering the long waits for shipping right now, and many local companies are able to provide products the same day. Buy the Basin isn't just aimed at retail consumers and restaurant goers. We also want businesses to consider purchasing from their neighbors before going out of the area for needed goods and services. So before you click purchase on your computer, make sure you are buying from one of our many local businesses in Odessa or the Basin. Better yet, go visit one of these local storefronts. After all, these are the same sponsors of our nonprofit organizations, student events, and local sports teams. They are the same ones you go to when asking for a community donation. The least we can do now is support them over an out-of-town store or online vendor. Help us spread the word about Buy the Basin by visiting Buy the Basin today for our logos and messages, as well as follow us on social media. Buy the Basin, the buck stays here. Renee Earls is president and CEO of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. Letters to the editor. JBS was a great man. I take offense at the labeling of John Ben Shepherd as a racist by Mr. Burt in the OA Letters to the Editor. I don't know if he actually knew Mr. Shepherd, but I did. In full disclosure, John Ben was a mentor and a friend for the past 25 years. I have been working to promote Mr. Shepherd's ideas of public service and working with young people to develop their leadership skills as part of the John Ben Shepherd Public Leadership Institute at UTPB. I find it reprehensible when people choose to cherry-pick activities and then give someone a label without looking at all the facts. It was interesting to notice the letter from Mr. Burt was followed by a letter defending Jefferson Davis and all his activities, not just the one that labeled him as a racist. In case he doesn't know, I would like to educate Mr. Burt and readers of the OA about Mr. Shepherd and his life. Mr. Burt cherry-picked facts to referring to Mr. Shepherd's work as Attorney General without noting the fact that the laws he was defending were part of the laws passed by all Democratic-controlled legislatures across the South since the Civil War to promote segregation. As the chief law enforcement officer of the state, he was bound to protect the law. With the NAACP, there was concern that it was somehow associated with the Communist Party. Remember, this was 1953 through 1957, but it was also during this time Mr. Shepherd, as Attorney General, stopped the voter fraud and corruption in Duval County. Does Mr. Burt know that John Ben was a close personal friend and advisor to President Lyndon Johnson and helped to craft the Civil Rights Act of the late 1960s? How about his work as a member of the executive committee that implemented the Marshall Plan after World War II that saved Europe and all the races and cultures of that time? How about his work to create the marker system for historic events in Texas that became the underpinning of the tourism industry in Texas that promotes all historic events. How about his efforts to locate a campus of the University of Texas system here in Odessa? How about all the other great achievements he did for Odessa? Also, he is credited with the saying, "Freedom is not free." He believed that to be true for all people and spent the last years of his life working toward that goal. One thing I will agree with Mr. Burt is that Odessa should have a street named in honor of Martin Luther King, but not John Ben Shepherd Parkway. Charles Cotton, Odessa. Don't break the law, fight cops. An ex-criminal's recipe for surviving the police. Don't use drugs. Don't get drunk. Don't go to sleep in your car in a business's drive-thru. Don't smart-mouth the police. Don't resist arrest. Don't fight with police. Don't punch a policeman in the head. Don't run from police. Don't steal a taser from police. Don't point a taser at police. Conclusion: obey police commands, respect authority. Result: survival. George Pitts, Fort Stockton.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, June the 21st, 2020. Letters to the editor. Renaming Lee High School is the right thing to do. Does Superintendent Orlando Riddick and the Midland ISD School Board really need a groundswell to do the right thing? Sometimes doing the right thing might put one in a minority position, but it's still the right thing. It's time for Midland to grow up, rename LHS, and move on. To do otherwise is to release Midland to the appearance of being an intellectual and cultural backwater. My personal suggestion is to rename the school after James Bradford, a real educator who taught at the school for many years and was later on the city council. He was a man everyone could look up to, and he spent much of his life in service to the Midland community. Not a big name, but a true everyday hero. His cause was worthy. Robert E. Lee's was not. I hope the city of Midland and MISD do not choose to remain tone deaf on this issue. Do the right thing. Just do it. Richard Posey, LHS Class of 1970, Gig Harbor, Washington. Now is the time to teach tolerance and diversity. The Midland ISD Board of Trustees is entrusted with the safety, education, welfare, and success of all students. These students are the future leaders and contributors to the success of a thriving, diverse community. What message are we sending to all students in a school district with schools honoring a general who waged a war to retain slavery? Had he won that war, the Texas Declaration of Causes and of Secession, dated February 2, 1861, states slavery should exist in all future time. Then there's the timing and attention of the naming of these schools after the general in Midland in 1961 and at least six other schools in Texas following the 1954 Supreme Court ruling to integrate schools and during the 1950s and 60s civil rights movement. Is the symbolism of a Confederate general a message of comfort and safety as an example of how the majority of students should treat their fellow minority students? It appears to be a clear message of condescension and retribution from the era of desegregation. Intolerance is taught to our children, honoring men who symbolize an unjust and immoral cause sends a clear message to all our children that people should be judged by the color of their skin or other differences rather than the content of their character. All students deserve to be treated with dignity, respect, and provided an equal opportunity to succeed and make a contribution to society. This is an opportunity to teach all students a lesson in tolerance and diversity versus intolerance and division. The Civil War has been over and lost by the Confederate States of America for 155 years. It's time to move on and honor Robert E. Lee's wish when he stated, "I think it wiser not to keep open the sores of war, but to follow the examples of those nations who endeavored to obliterate the marks of civil strife, to commit to oblivion the feelings engendered." We live in the United States of America, not the Confederate States of America. Signed, Thomas A. Frazier III, Albany, California, Midland High School class of 1968. Love thy neighbor. Wear a mask. The Frank Capra movie, It's a Wonderful Life, is a large part of our Christmas holiday and an inspiring movie to watch during difficult times, reassuring us that if we love our neighbors here on earth, in our hour of need, heaven and earth will hear and answer our prayers. That message and others in this movie are those of the greatest generation, the generation that gave up their dreams to fight in the Second World War. George Bailey, portrayed by Jimmy Stewart in the movie, sacrifices his dreams to help others in his town of Bedford Falls. In his hour of need, his neighbors realize they owe not only their prosperity, but their humanity to George. And the goodwill George has sown in Bedford Falls moves heaven and earth to help him. At this moment, we have the extraordinary opportunity to physically demonstrate our faith and goodwill toward one another, the elegantly simple premise of Judeo-Christian faith, to love God and love thy neighbor. Please wear a mask to protect our medical personnel, police and fire departments, grocery and other retail store employees, and all those who support them who are on the front lines. By doing so, we perpetuate the reopening of businesses, save countless lives, and remind ourselves of the essential responsibility we have during our short time here. Love thy neighbor, wear a mask. Jack E. Blake, Jr. Hospital District Election. Support MMH by supporting Proposition A. You can go out of town for your elective procedures, but when you have a heart attack or an emergency, you'll be on a stretcher in the emergency department of Midland Memorial Hospital. Those were the words of Roz Grover as we toured the crowded, outdated ED several years ago and planned for the new tower. I thought of those words when I was with my wife in the ED a couple of weeks ago. I was so very grateful that we had a modern, well-equipped department and the old ED existed no more. I can only heap praise on the entire hospital for our stay. The ED was efficient, the nurses were compassionate and helpful, the doctors were on top of the problem, and the care she received during her short stay was excellent. Now we find ourselves at another crossroads, and in order to fund this excellent level of care in the future, we all need to support the hospital by passing Proposition A on July 14th. Glenn Rogers. Now is the time to support Midland Health. If ever there was a time for those who use Midland Memorial Hospital and its Midland Health clinics to support it, it's now. There will be an ongoing government shortfalls everywhere, and our hospital district hired experts long before COVID-19 struck who determined that MCHD's $50 million in federal subsidies this year will fall to $12 million in future years. That's a whopping difference of $38 million to pay for a variety of services including medical residents, community clinics, psychiatric and substance abuse care for uninsured and underinsured patients, and on-call physician stipends. The election on July 14th is to consider adding 0.25% sales tax to taxable goods and services purchased by anyone shopping in Midland. Currently, we pay 8%, so this would raise our sales tax to 8.25%, which we paid for many years for the sports complex. Our election office has already trained in safety protocols, and social distancing will occur at polling sites. Voters with active COVID-19 infections or those over 65 may request ballots by mail. Please join us in casting your vote for a tiny sales tax addition to be borne by shoppers to keep Midland health thriving. Iris Foster. Take care of community by voting for Proposition A. Vote yes to Prop A. Given these uncertain times, I am heartened to see our community rallying behind Midland Memorial Hospital in many positive ways. Proposition A must be successful so Midland residents can look back and count its passage as a bright spot in an otherwise dismal year. I strongly support Proposition A, and I want to encourage the community to vote yes. Due to decisions made in D.C. and Austin, our hospital and many others across our state are facing funding shortfalls. In response, to Hospital Board decided to spread the burden of supporting Midland's healthcare infrastructure beyond property owners to include everyone in the community, as well as residents of surrounding communities who depend on Midland for most of the goods and services they buy. In West Texas, we take care of each other, and this is our chance to continue that tradition. Join me in supporting Proposition A on Tuesday, July 14th. Early voting is scheduled for June 29th through July 10th. Cecily Schull. Services will be lost without Proposition A. Midland stands to lose essential community health services due to impending cuts in federal hospital funding. These include certain pediatric and primary adult care services, inpatient mental health and substance abuse services, among others. Losing these would be devastating for all of us. Fortunately, Midland can keep these vital programs by passing Proposition A on July 14th. It will add 0.25 cents to Midland County's sales tax, with all revenue going to Midland County Hospital District, ensuring these programs continue. It is worth noting that Odessa's Medical Center Health already shares in a whopping 0.75 cents of Ector County's sales tax. Midland could keep our health services running for a mere 0.25 cents. If we expect to receive the vital care we need locally and keep Midland Health and its services strong, we must vote for Proposition A. D. Link Grimes, Midland County Hospital District Board Member, District 4. Rogers' values prepare him to be judge. David Rogers is a native Midlander and a fourth-generation West Texan, whose great-grandparents came to West Texas in the late 1800s. The values David received from his family and community are strong, traditional, conservative, West Texas values. My late husband, Clayton Williams, was pleased that David was a graduate of Texas A&M, and no matter where we were, if David walked in, Clayton would let out a loud Aggie whoop. They were also both members of the Corps of Cadets, which embodies those same values of honor, courage, integrity, discipline, and selfless service. David's character is molded from these lifelong values and helped prepare him for the office of judge of the 142nd District Court. In these turbulent times, we need a judge who has extensive experience trying cases in Midland courts. David is board certified in criminal law and has 25 years of trial experience with both criminal and civil cases. David Rogers has the best interest of our nation, our state, and our city in mind. He will make sure that justice is upheld. I enthusiastically endorse David Rogers and hope you will join me in voting for him. Modesta Williams.
Hello, this is Michael. I'll be reading from the Odessa American, Friday, June 26, 2020. Exercises for arthritic hands, beneficial or detrimental? To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 69-year-old woman developing arthritis in my fingers, especially the middle joints. I do various finger bending and straightening exercises, and I rub my hands together vigorously to warm them. I recently visited a hand orthopedist to get a steroid injection into the worst joint. To my surprise, he advised me to avoid exercising my fingers because it puts extra strain on the joints and may accelerate the symptoms. Are you aware of evidence for or against hand exercise to keep arthritis in check? Answer. It is true that symptoms of osteoarthritis in the hand, which is by far the most likely cause of hand pain in older women, will often get worse after exercise. So although the orthopedist's recommendation makes some sense at first look, I doubt that stretching them and straightening exercises are doing harm. It's high-impact exercises that should be avoided. Moreover, there is sufficient data from clinical studies to make us reasonably sure that regular hand exercises done consistently over a period of time, ranging from 3 to 6 months, reduced hand stiffness and pain, and improved hand function. My advice is to avoid overdoing hand tasks, but to discuss a referral to a hand physical or occupational therapist to get exercises. Unsure mental health clouds vision of the future. Dear Abby, for Friday, June 26th. Dear Abby, I recently started dating again after ending a very difficult marriage. To say I am guarding my heart for fear of getting hurt would be an understatement. I have met someone that I can see having a future with, but some things concern me. He has been hospitalized for mental health reasons in the past. He's constantly saying, "I'm sorry, I'm so screwed up," or remarking about his being crazy. He mentions his depression almost daily, and he hates being, as he puts it, messed up in the head. He just can't seem to move past his issues. I feel like he doesn't want to move forward and start living his life again. I have lived with depression for most of my life, but it doesn't define who I am. If I don't respond to his calls or messages right away, he gets hurt and sometimes I'm mad at him. My question is, am I being overly cautious based on not wanting to get hurt again, or should I take a step back? I would like to see a future with him, but I'm not sure he is ready to see any kind of a future with anyone. Guarded Heart. Dear Guarded Heart, you are not being overly cautious. You are asking yourself intelligent, insightful questions about someone who appears not as far along on the path to mental wellness as you are. Is this man still being treated for his issues? If not, he should be encouraged to talk with a licensed mental health professional not only about his depression, but also his glaring lack of self-esteem. From your description, I would have to say he needs a friend now more than a romance, so take plenty of time if you proceed in this relationship. If he makes progress, see where things lead. If not, then in light of your own history, it might be better for you to find someone who is stronger. Dear Abby, I have been in a 6-year relationship. About 2 years into it, I found out that Wayne was separated but not divorced from his wife of 20 years. The fact that they are separated is not the issue. They live together and do things as a married couple. The wife and I have met each other several times, and I have gone to his children's graduation parties and family weddings. He has told me every year that this is the year he will file for divorce, but it still hasn't happened. I don't know why he is holding on, because I do not believe they are intimate. Their children are adults, so there is nothing keeping them together. He tells me he can't live without me, but his actions have proven otherwise. Do you think they are in an open marriage? Is there any hope for our future together? Wasting time in Massachusetts. Dear Wasting Time, not at the rate you are going. I suspect the reason Wayne hasn't followed through and filed for divorce may be financial. He and his wife may also like things just the way they are because they can maintain their social life. He's comfortable at home, and he has you to sleep with, which may be a relief to her. You have my sympathy, but I think you have invested enough time. What's going on is unfair to you. This romance was based on dishonesty on his part, and you deserve more than you have been getting.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Cancer and a moon in Virgo. Happy birthday for Friday, June 26, 2020. Protective and very physical, you are a tower of strength to your family and friends. This year finds you working on a very challenging project that encounters delays, but is successful. If single, you need to be with the one you love. You search until you find the perfect mate. If attached, you most often have children, as family is vital to you. You provide the ideal home environment. Taurus has expensive tastes like you. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 4 stars. Business certainly picks up for those in service-oriented occupations. Wonderful planetary aspects might signal long-term career opportunities for some lucky Aries. Take advantage while you can. Be conscious of some job-related stress and get extra rest. Tonight, a good night's sleep. Taurus, April 20 through May 20, 3 stars. Take particular advantage of romantic aspects today. For singles, if you meet someone now, it certainly will not be platonic. However, love could turn out to be mighty expensive. Watch reckless behavior and do not gamble sexually or financially. Tonight, date night. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 5 stars. Joyful new beginnings take place today, perhaps even travel-related, for the future. Just expect your daily routine to be upset and leave yourself extra time for getting places. Plans and thoughts are subject to change. Tonight, a meeting opens new doors. Cancer, June 21 through July 22, 3 stars. You might not be sure of the next move. Ask questions. Get feedback. This combination will help you gain a better grasp on what needs to be done. You will see everything settle in. Tonight, defer to a loved one on plans. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 2 stars. Do not get involved in any lending or borrowing of money with either friends or banks today. Your bank balance might dwindle, possibly due to sudden necessary repairs. Try to be aware of budgetary concerns and put some money away for a rainy day. Tonight, relax. Virgo, August 23 through September 22, 5 stars. You feel a lightening up. Ideas come forward. Friends seem enthusiastic and responsive. Solidify an important relationship when the chance appears. A child or loved one has some strong feelings to share. You intuitively know what needs to be said. Tonight, as you like it. Libra, September 23 through October 22, 3 stars. Avoid socializing, especially if travel is involved, as today suggests delays and upsets. Get extra rest, as nerves might be on edge. The forming of confidential plans is favored. Save social days for next month, when aspects are better. Tonight, meditation in the bath. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Be more direct in how you handle an emotional issue. Someone might not be capable of reading in between the lines. You might need to stop and reflect on the most effective manner or way to interact with this person. Tonight, add more fun to the moment. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 3 stars. Do not spread yourself too thin. Involvement in too many projects at once could fray your nerves to the point where you become a sarcastic, critical monster. Some form of relaxation therapy, be it yoga or simply watching a movie, could help. Tonight, early bedtime. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 3 stars. Students might find it difficult to study today. Those not taking courses might find themselves searching within for their true path in life. You hear from an old friend far away. Listen to what she or he has to say. Tonight, slow down. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 2 stars. Harmony will not be easy to come by when deception is in the air. Instability reigns, leading to possible separation. Do not make any sudden decisions. Today does favor long-term financial investments and changes of residence for some of you. Tonight, you feel torn. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Meeting someone powerful, one who could very significantly change your life, is emphasized today. The urge to take considerable action of some kind, be it in a committed relationship or pooling financial resources, is very strong. Tonight, catch up with family. Born today, writer Pearl S. Buck, 1892, director Paul Thomas Anderson, 1970, baseball player Derek Jeter, 1974.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.